We have to be able to check in on one another. As a licensed clinical social worker, community activism is something that I have always had a strong affinity for, something I've always been connected to. Maybe they're just one or two situations away from where you are.
Activists are extremely unique, right? Because the passion that you have to have inside of you in order to pick a cause and to want to bring about change in the world, you have to be a passionate person. But oftentimes, because that passion is not channeled appropriately, it leads to greater levels of burnout.
Welcome to New Jersey Revolution Radio Live. We're here on a Saturday morning, which is odd. But it feels good. I'm kind of a morning person myself, despite doing a show. Normally happens on Wednesday evenings at 8 p.m., which you can tune into every week here from New Jersey Revolution Radio Studios. We talk about art and activism and all kinds of other stuff. But every once in a while, some sponsors get together and they help us put together a little bit of a special. And I want to thank the Coffee House in Edison, New Jersey, one of the sponsors you should know about already if you pay attention to our network. Prior to COVID, we were doing podcasts from there on a monthly basis and having coffee and hanging out. And I miss those times. But fortunately for us, the Coffee House has managed to not only stay open, but, you know, continue to sponsor us and help us out by bringing this special to you, as well as Blissful Infusions, which do CBD edible chocolates. You can find them on Facebook by checking out Blissful Infusions, and we encourage you. They're part of the medical cannabis community as well. So we want you to, you know, take a look at their business and, you know, support the businesses that help us. One of those partners in New Jersey Revolution Radio is Great Joy Counseling. And we thank them for being here today. And I will say, before we get on to the festivities today, that, you know, you can sponsor programming here on New Jersey Revolution Radio. We are spreading out our network a little more lately and working to expand what we're capable of doing here at New Jersey Revolution Radio. And that means making sure that we, you know, talk about issues that you want to talk about. So if you have a special issue and you want to bring sponsorship in and help us put together something that's meaningful for social change, that works to fight the detrimental effects of capitalism, then, you know, you too can, you know, sponsor programming here on New Jersey Revolution Radio, either as an individual by donating at www.njrevolutionradio.com/donate, or email us info@njrevolutionradio.com. We're always looking for people to collaborate with on work that's, you know, going to help people through difficult times. And today's special is based on, you know, environments that I've been in. That the idea came from meeting Dr. Sampson at a protest and reflecting on, you know, 20 years of activism and the effects it's taken on not just me personally, but the people around me. And I've personally dealt with mental health issues and been open and honest about it. And I think being open and honest about it has been both negatives and positives. I'm going to talk to Dr. Sampson about that. So let's bring her in and thank her very much for being here today, because she's been great. I mean, we've been working together behind the scenes on this for a couple of weeks now. And I really appreciate your time. I know it's valuable, Doctor. Thank you and welcome to our special show.
Thank you so much, Brian. It is such a pleasure to be here. You know, I love the New Jersey Revolution Radio family.
Yeah, you're part of it at this point. So, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, how I brought this up in personal experiences, but one of my first questions was like, do you deal with organizations that have issues dealing with people who have mental health or have really stressful environments that are not healthy? And you're like, all the time.
All the time. Every day. Every day.
So tell me about that experience. Just, you know, dealing with groups of people in general, it doesn't have to be specific to activists, but have you dealt with businesses that have done this and other organizations?
Absolutely. So I have a consulting component to my business. So it's Great Joy Counseling and Consulting Services. So I do a lot of for-profit and nonprofit consulting. And usually when I come in, it is all about how individuals can work together, you know, more succinctly. It's all about management, learning how to lead properly from behind. It's all about staff being motivated to work together, because usually in most organizations, the issue is not the mission, Brian. It's also not the vision or any of those things, but it is usually the people stuff, right? So all of the things with the people is what stops the mission from being accomplished. So my job is to really go in and consult and help them see some of the areas where they may have had blind spots so that they can improve those people related issues.
It sounds like very intense work.
It is intense. It's super intense, right? Because I think that everyone starts out with good intentions, right? But there's a quote, and that quote is, the road to hell is paved with good intentions, right? So it's not enough to be connected to the mission. It's not enough to want to do the work. It's about everyone working together in a way that will make the mission the priority. And sometimes people's issues do not allow them to put that first. Sometimes their own issues, their own insecurities, their own mental health issues, emotional health issues cause them to not be able to accomplish what they need to accomplish.
There's also an effect, I think, when we talk about activist organizations and people that are involved in social change, that you're affecting others around you.
Absolutely.
And, you know, in thinking of like my own experiences, I also tried to reach out a little bit beyond my own, like the impact of people on my mental health. And I also start to try to think of how I acted when others around me were having mental health issues and how I behaved, and it was wrong. leading up to this interview, as you know, as I read and I started to listen to you and my own personal mental health counselors, you know, I started to realize the mistakes that I had made in dealing with people who were having really significant emotional health issues. I mean, to the point of where they were disconnected from reality, yet still participating in political work, in organizational work. Those are the circumstances. And if you're listening and you think I'm talking about you, I'm talking about me. I'm talking about you. I'm talking about everybody. It's not exclusive. So what leads to that kind of stuff?
I think a lot of things lead to it. I think, you know, activists are extremely unique, right? Because the passion that you have to have inside of you in order to pick a cause and to want to bring about change in the world, you have to be a passionate person. But oftentimes, because that passion is not channeled appropriately, it leads to greater levels of burnout, right? When you're the one leading the charge, or you're the one that's doing the marches, and you feel like people should be with you and they're not, that can lead to extreme feelings of rejection, right? And so rejection is what I call the low level, base level beginning to depression, right? So it's recognizing how all of this works. And that's why I said in the beginning, the intentions always start out good, right? Like, people don't do community work, or they don't do political work because they want to harm. They do it because they want to help. They do it because they want to be around other people who see things the same way that they do, and they want things to change. But if you are not safeguarding your own mental health and safeguarding your own emotional health and well-being, it's very easy to get sucked into the machine. So now the mission becomes more and more distant, and you start to get bogged down with the nuances. It's the day-to-day issues that cause problems. I say the same for any relationship, Brian, whether it's a work relationship, a interpersonal relationship, it doesn't matter. It's not the big stuff that causes problems. It's the everyday small things that start to chip away at your viewpoint. And when that happens, it's very hard to recover from that, especially if it happens over an extended period of time.
I had a show last week with Jeremy Ritt, Infinite Skills, as a rapper, and the dude is way positive, and he really knows how to keep his messaging positive. Yet, despite dealing with the same issues I do, like, we have very similar politics, and I found that this, like, he's got a better grip on his mental health than I do. I'll tell you that much. And it was very impressive. He said something. How true is it that you got to love you some you? He quoted Terrell Owens that I love me some me, and that's very important. And he learned that at a young age. And I guess here at 43, I still haven't learned that. How do you teach people to really, like, understand that they're important to other people? That's what, well, my...
I,
shrink is always drilling
into. I think that's huge, Brian, because the reality is most people, and in our society, we are taught to cultivate self-esteem, right? And so most people have very high self-esteem, but very low self-worth. So the way to teach self-love is by prioritizing self-worth. And a lot of people, Brian, use self-worth and self-esteem interchangeably, but they do not mean the same thing, right? So I can have a very high self-esteem about my abilities as a professor or my abilities to be a great psychotherapist or a consultant or an author or anything else that I'm able to do, right? Most people are able to pick something in their lives that they do well, and they're able to feel good about that. However, oftentimes we do not feel good about who we are. Who we are when we strip all of those titles away, all of those roles away, right? Who's left then? And that is what needs to be improved for self-love to increase. If you don't tap into who you are, then there will be major, major problems down the road. And it leads to isolation. It leads to serious mental health issues, right? Like, a lot of people see it in our society as, you know, a person being conceited or being full of themselves, etc. But I think that it's super important for you to recognize who you are outside of those roles, to cultivate that, to appreciate that, right? And that appreciation, Brian, comes with accepting all the amazing things about you and the things about you that you may not like, right? One thing I do internally, I constantly take inventory, right? So I say to myself, okay, Leticia, what things are you doing great, right? I always start with the good things. So what things are you doing great, right? And I come to terms with those things. And then there are things that I may not like about myself so much. And I decide what issues I want to work on and what issues I'm not willing to work on yet, right? And so as you do that, you start to have a lot more empathy for yourself, because oftentimes we're also conditioned in our society, Brian, to have empathy for everyone else except ourselves, right? We don't know the importance of honoring ourselves, honoring our decisions. The decisions that you've made that have brought you to this point at 43, it's super important to honor. Most people, though, look back with regret. If only I had done this, if only I had done that. Well, guess what? You made the best decisions at that point in your life with the information you had. So I don't look at my 30s or my 20s or my teens and say, oh man, if I only had done things differently, life would be better. Because what probability tells us, Brian, is that life probably would not be better, it would be worse, right? So honor the decisions you made. Know that the decisions you make are to your highest good. And if it doesn't work out well for you, all you have to do is recalculate. Right? We're supposed to be human GPSs. We're supposed to constantly, all the time, recalibrate our lives. And when you are able to do that, and you're able to let go of people pleasing, and you're able to let go of the expectations of other people, you find yourself really improving your self-worth, which leads to self-love.
I believe it's a Buddhist principle that you can only manage your life. You can't go back and change things. Nobody has a time machine. So you can't go back and, you know, if you've had addiction problems or mental, you can't go back and stop that from happening in the past, but you can take your life at this moment and move forward in a more positive, having learned from that. You practice cognitive behavioral health, as your profession. Do you have any other studies that you like to include? I know that you say you're a licensed clinical social worker as well. Do you have any other lines of study that you incorporate into your teachings?
Absolutely. So the one that I would do the most for activists would actually be dialectical behavioral therapy. Ooh. And that's called DBT, right? So DBT is all about mastering your emotions. And it starts with a very simple principle. And that principle is radical acceptance. And that sounds very counterintuitive to activists, right? Because if we accepted our circumstances, right, we would not be doing this work. But it doesn't mean that you don't want things to change. It means that you are content with what things are right now. Oftentimes we run ourselves down because we are so focused on just getting to the, what I call mountaintop experience, that we don't enjoy the journey. I say all the time that it is not about the destination, it's about the journey. It's about the people you meet along the way. It's about the opportunities that can be created along the way, right? So it's very important for activists this, especially to safeguard their mental health by recognizing the importance of radical acceptance. It doesn't mean we're not working to have change, but we want to be connected to what's going on in the moment. You know, I think about the protests where we met, right? The people there were so connected to what was going on, and that energy drew more people. Yeah, you could feel it. Like, I've been to protests where people were kind of just there, but not really sure why, you know, like, I'm just going to show up and I'm going to have my sign.
And walk around with your sign.
Exactly. Yes, exactly. So robotic, right? Like, I should be doing something about this issue, right? But that energy, when you are connected, it's just transferable. So activists have to be able to harness that positively.
I've been trying to just kind of use, you know, my natural habits to my advantage. So if you notice, I move around a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at that protest, I'm constantly walking around with my camera. That doesn't all come from training in media work. I have none of that. That comes directly from my anxiety, and I can't sit still because
I'm
like a little kid. And I really had, I don't know whether, and honestly, I don't think I've ever been properly diagnosed. Like, I have just a bunch of stuff going on that I need to deal with. And I think mental health, you know, for me, when you get into dealing with it and at least learning about it, it's a moment to moment thing. It's like, what do I have to deal with right now? In a positive manner, you know, so it's really like we can talk about the larger kind of philosophy and structures and teachings and stuff, but really you got to deal with different emotions on different days. I have great days where I'm very happy and days where I don't want to get out of bed, or I physically can't get out of bed. So, you know, it's you have to ride that roller coaster.
But I think it's important to know, Brian, I just want to jump in for a second, because I think that we have to start normalizing that. One thing I say all the time is that our society makes us think that every day is supposed to be a 10. And what I say is that every day is not your birthday, every day is not your anniversary, and it's not like a holiday that you love, right? So it's okay to know that every day will not be a 10. You may have some days that are 3. Listen, I'm a psychotherapist. I've been in this field for 22 years. There are days where I have to cancel my clients. I have to order Uber Eats and watch Netflix. And that's okay. It doesn't make us a bad person. It doesn't make us weak. It doesn't make us unable to face the world. But part of safeguarding your mental health is knowing what you need when. Now, I am certainly not going to cancel clients every day for 6 weeks, right? And have my Netflix in bed dates with myself. But right. We have to be okay saying, you know what? I need to disconnect. And it's so funny, because the person that I see that's in my life that does that the most is my daughter. My daughter will be 15 this month, and she is the queen. She epitomizes self-care and taking mental health days. She'll get up some days, you know, and say, and this was pre-COVID, you know, and say, you know what, today is not a day. I'm not into going to school today. And I don't push her. You know, she will disconnect. Hey, you know, I know we were going to watch this movie, but I'm going to take a bubble bath instead, and I'm going to do a face mask and take care of me. And that is the way we're supposed to live our lives. Our society just has us literally like the Jetsons, right? Now I'm aging myself now. Everybody says, now I'm aging myself. But in the Jetsons, right? All George Jetson did was move cogs every day. That's what our society wants us to do, to have our noses to the grindstone, get up, do a 9-to-5, pay our bills, have moments of fun, and that's it. And that's your life until you're retired. And we have to start to redefine that, especially activists, especially those who want to make a substantial change in society. We have to recognize that we can reject that and do what makes us happy, still work, still take care of our responsibilities, but be okay while doing it.
There you go. And I see you have some colleagues on the line here saying thank you for saying about having to cancel your clients. And I had to do it once, but then I realized I have to do it. So, you know, you can see, like, even people that are professionals at mental health, and yes. I talk to, like, my counselor, like, they all have their own counselors, and,
yes.
And I've seen stress in everybody in every profession. And I guess what I wanted to ask, I guess now is, you know, what are really, you know, the responsibilities of leaders? You know, I've been in activism now, I'd like to say, for about, you know, at least 15 years. I guess it's hard to say when you actually start being an activist, right? I've always had a social conscience, and I've always been into politics, although they always haven't been the same. But, you know, as you spend activist time, you gain skills and you make contacts and you start to be able to actually affect other people's lives. It's something that I've taken very seriously. And I wanted to share with you something that I was taught as an organizer, which is has helped guide me in ethics. And because I had a question, because I found as I started organizing that people were manipulative. I mean, you find yourself in politics, the nature of it is to be manipulated, right? If you hold power, people come to you and ask you to use that power to their benefit or to their cause's benefit. So I think it's hard to take away being manipulated because everybody's
it's part of it. Lobbying
is kind of manipulative. So I was always asking, you know, what's the line? When I found myself feeling, particularly in the union that I worked for, being manipulated, being like being guided into things that really I probably shouldn't have been or didn't want to be guided into. And I looked at my own operation and said, is this what I've been doing to people? Like, if I've been organizing like this and fucking with people's heads? Mm-hmm. And I asked that question, and I was taught in an organizing seminar that the line is you have to let people know what you're guiding them into and let them have ownership. So if I tell you I'm leading you into a political movement and we're going to fight for X, Y, Z, that's what we do. And those are the principles we guide by. But later down the road, I don't change course, that I don't bring you into an environmental group that 6 months in has taken a lot of money out of your pocket and put it into somebody's, you know, for instance, which is what cults are famous for. And,
absolutely.
You know, I just wanted to ask, what's the responsibility of leaders to make sure that their organization doesn't turn into a psychologically manipulative organization like a lot of organizations, unfortunately, that I've fallen into?
Most are. I mean, because here's the thing, you know, what I like to say is that there are many organizations that sociopaths are able to lead. Why? Because they're charismatic, right? They're able to easily influence people. And as I started this conversation saying, most people want to help. People don't get into organizations or activism because they want things to be the same. So if your leader, okay, is just charismatic, right, and manipulative and has their own mental health problems, well, you are about to hit a whirlwind of problems. And this is where it is so important to constantly take self-inventory, right? This is why we have to be okay saying goodbye. One thing I tell people all the time is that one of the greatest gifts I have in my life is the gift of goodbye. I use that with reckless abandon, because if something does not serve you, it is your responsibility to move away from it. I don't care who it is, and I don't care what it is. Oftentimes, we want to help so much that we miss all of the signs. One thing I want to say, so in addition, as I said, to being a licensed clinical social worker, a psychotherapist, all of those things, one of the master's degrees I have is in public administration, right? So I actually went to school to learn how to lead organizations. And out of that entire master's program, I walked away with one major sentiment, and that is true leaders lead from behind. Okay, true leaders lead from behind. So if you're at an organization and it's all about the leadership and it's all about, you know, that person or that face of the organization and not the real work, that is a problem. Obviously, as the owner of Great Joy Counseling and Consulting Services, I'm the face of it, but the work is the priority, not me personally. And I think that's where sometimes people don't recognize that fine line and it becomes blurred, and that's where problems arise. So activists, it is your responsibility, you know, if you're connected to an organization, it is your responsibility to really vet that organization, to really take a look at the people that are in leadership. One good way to know, Brian, and this is gonna sound silly to some, but it's something I think people miss. So it's almost like the epitome of not seeing the forest for the trees. If you are in an organization that is efficiently run, then those people at the top will have very different personalities. And what I mean by that is this: for an organization to be efficient, you cannot have people who have the same skills, right? So for example, I have a person that runs my social media, right? I have a person that is my publicist. I have a person that's my attorney. I have a person that's my CPA. I have executive assistants. Why? Because those are not my area of expertise, right? Yep. Those are not the areas that I perform well in. I stay in my lane for the organization, and other people with all of their administrative skills or their amazing social media skills, their marketing skills, etc., they're in their lane, and it all works. Organizations that have people with very similar sentiments or very similar just perspectives and values or even temperaments, right? It's always an indication for me as a consultant that there's a problem, because we should be working with people who have very different skill sets. That's what makes it all work. People who their secretary acts like them, or the other executive acts like them, or the entire team all has the same personality, it's not going to work well. That's how you know that it's about them and it's not about the mission. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, and it's exact. I mean, I it's what I've seen from the organization. It's exactly what I've seen from experience. I mean, good leadership to me has always been taught, and I hate to tell you that I was in the military and I learned leadership there, but I did. I mean, look, you know, my military politics aside, they teach you how to help others be successful. So in that environment, so yep. You get into the military right away, they talk about how to get promoted, how to study to get promoted, what courses you need to take. You're taught as supervision. And I actually found, I'm looking through my attic, I found my old Navy leadership manual. And it's all about, is a lot of authoritarian discipline that I would not prefer have to deal with anymore. And so I didn't spend a lot of time in the military. But there's also like this attitude of your whole job as a leader is to groom other leaders, is to teach people what you know.
Yes.
And, you know, I think like you said, not everybody can be an expert at everything. And part of being a leader is being able to, for an organizer, is being able to say, listen, I'm not a mental health expert. I've just dealt with this and seen it. So let me talk to a doctor and let me bring someone with letters in front of their name that can talk about this professionally and not pretend to everybody like I'm a mental health expert and I can do this. But what I can do as a leader is reach out and make better decisions collaborating rather than trying to isolate power. And I think in the political world, it becomes, I don't know how bad it is in other environments, because I guess I've spent way too much time in this nonsense, but it's about power. People isolate themselves for power. They save
lists. Of course.
They keep lists. They don't share contacts. They don't tell you who you've talked to. It's one office door gets closed and then you hop into the other office and close that door and talk. It's very odd, and it becomes very odd and very cutthroaty behavior. So I've seen those environments, and I think, like you said, no matter what you kind of, I hope, you know, we geared this towards activism today. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to keep you much longer because
it's
the weekend. But I do want to say that, you know, it's really welcome that we can bring this to kind of any aspect of our lives, you know.
Absolutely. But I think here's the thing, Brian, and I think this is something that's often missed, especially in leadership and with organizations where there are problems, right? A true leader wants to groom other people to replace them. So as I think about, or to go off on their own, right? So I think about all of my staff. I love them. They do an amazing job. They're phenomenal therapists. But my job is to make them better than me. My job is to impart all the knowledge that I've had over these last 22 years so that at year three, they are skilled the way a person who's been doing this two decades has been. And then they have to reach back and do the same thing. And that is the way it's supposed to work. Oftentimes people in leadership positions, let's go back to that self-esteem and self-worth issue, right? They may have self-esteem, right? But because they don't have a good sense of self-worth, they don't want to be eclipsed. They don't want anyone to take over, right? They don't want anyone to outshine them. And that is where problems arise. People have been killed for things like this, right? When you think about some of the most famous activists in the world that have lost their life, it all hasn't been because, you know, their message, but it's some of it has absolutely been because of the people around them, right? Not being happy with how they were able to climb or how they were able to make people feel. And jealousy, you know, is crueler than the grave. That's another thing that I say. So you also have organizations where people will look at your skills, Brian, and say, he's too smart. She's too smart. He's able to get people to listen in a way that I can't. you know, let's stress him out. Let's inundate him with something else where he's not even able to use his true skills. True leaders are able to tap into the skills of other people and help them maximize them and use them to their greatest potential. And for activists, that is so important, right? Because the work that we are doing is not work that the average Joe is willing to do. Most people are not willing to put themselves on the line and be on programs like this, or to facilitate programs like this, or go lead a protest, or even have conversations that say, you know what, this establishment, we need to do something about it. You know what, I'm not a part of either of these political parties. Let's do something over here. Most people aren't willing to do that, right? Because they are easily led. They're easily led, unfortunately, to their demise. So those of us that are serious about activism have to be willing to raise our voices when organizations are harming those that are here to help. We have to be willing to say, nope, something's wrong here, right? And oftentimes, you know, you asked me a question when we were talking offline about should we stay in those environments or and try to fix them, or should we walk away? And I would say the answer truly depends on what feels good to your soul. I am all about, you know, checking things out and seeing if something can be fixed, but I do not stay in a bad situation long. If I see and my heart tells me this is not going to work, it is time for me to go elsewhere. And I think we as activists have to be willing to do that. Oftentimes we stay connected too long and we become bitter, we become disconnected, and we become distant. And then again, the entire movement and our purpose is completely skewed. So I would say it's something that we all have to look at. Take a look at the organizations you're connected to. Are you still connected? Are you still inspired? And if not, what needs to change?
Before we go, I'll give you a little open space to wrap us up. But, you know, it's a stressful time right now. And I think this special episode is well-timed because as elections go, there's a couple of dynamics. There's a lot of dynamics that happen in the activist community, but I think a couple that are important is one, energy gets drained off of cause-dedicated activists, those of us that dedicate our times either to minimum wage or prison abolition or whatever. All of a sudden, everybody's going to work for Joe Biden, and it drives us fucking stop, come on. Yeah. Meeting, any money for this? We can do it at protest. Oh no, I'm gonna phone bank for Joe. You know, it really a lot of energy gets sucked out of our bases of support during times of non-electoral shenanigans. And what a lot of us view as just bougie sideshow nonsense that really is not the grassroots work that we cherish, yeah. Right? Not important. Not that it's, you know, not listen, you do your thing. It's democracy. Okay, fine. But it puts stress on that. And then there's also the stress of watching people out there who are, you know, promoting a system that many of us don't believe in, you know, very much. You know, like I'm not impressed by anybody out there, and I don't think anybody is. And you talked about mental illness and leadership. What do we have here?
We don't have that kind of time.
Right? I mean, we put a mentally ill game show host in charge of nuclear weapons. So when we talk about environments, we really don't have good examples at that level. You know, I think so it's up to us to provide that leadership here. I think you answered the question that you've been asking, like, do we stay in or get out? At least for me. And you kind of said it, but I wanted to say that it's hit home with me during this conversation is my energy going to good use? Like, am I getting out? I think some of our problem is the cause getting something out of this? Like, is my sacrifice resulting in either policy or organizing or an election or whatever? So my sacrifice, is it worth it if the cause is benefiting? But you have to benefit. You can't just be all give.
No, it's about
other people are taking. Person.
That's right. Absolutely they will. Absolutely they will. And that's not their responsibility. It is your responsibility to be the guardian of you, right? So I think it's absolutely is the cause benefiting, but are you benefiting? Are you okay? And when you feel good about yourself and when you have a high level of self-worth and you are operating in self-love, that is primary. You know, one thing I say all the time is, you know, I grew up in an era, here I am aging myself again, but I grew up in an era where Spike Lee's movie, Do the Right Thing, right, is what people were saying. But Do the Right Thing is about doing what's right first and foremost for yourself, right? Mm-hmm. You have to be doing what is right for you and what feels good to you and for you in order for these things to be effective, because there is nothing worse than wanting to do the right thing, but being around the wrong people at the wrong time and in the wrong places, and it just all, you know, kind of blows up in your face. And that's what's important. Another thing I want to say to activists is this. One thing that's super important, and I found this when I had gotten to probably, Brian, protest number 8. I was here doing protests in New Jersey. I was doing protests in New York City. And, you know, I did one in New York, and I like came home and I rested for a couple days. And I was like, okay, I need a break. I need a physical break. And I think that,
after 8 days straight.
Like I was fried. And I did. I canceled clients. I just literally like laid in bed and I really thought about this. And I want activists to really know this and to really listen closely to this. We have to conserve our energy. We have to be very strategic about what we do. So that same week, Brian, there were other protests. There was actually one in my hometown that I didn't go. But how did I help? I helped because I shared it. I helped the actual activist that organized it. I told her what to do, maybe what not to do, how it could be successful. And I was able to lend myself in that way. But if I would have gone and pushed myself, how would so many other people have been affected if now I can't be a good therapist, or I can't be a good mom, or I can't be a good partner, or I can't be a good sister, a good daughter, a good friend? So that's the piece where I think activists sometimes don't really remedy things. They just kind of keep going at a breakneck speed and then break down. Yeah. And you're not useful if you break down.
Misery loves company. And as an activist, and I hope all the activists out there listening or people that are connected to activists, if you're a friend, you got a family member, I think it's important that you understand what activists go through. Elizabeth, you know, I've had conversations like nobody gets what we go through. We put ourselves in these positions. You know, honestly, we're responsible for our own surroundings, like you said. But, you know, it's also important that if you know activists, that you kind of get why we're a little off sometimes, why we get a little cranky at the news more than others. I mean, exactly. A little understanding does go a long way. And we are, you know, I don't know many activists trying to do bad stuff. I don't think it's narcissists trying to manipulate people. I think there's environments out there that need changing. But like you said, people come into it with good intentions. And I think we need to keep that alive. People need to have good intentions throughout their. We've done 20 years. I've been doing stuff. I wanted to do good things at the start of it. I still want to do good things now. And I appreciate you. And I appreciate Great Joy Counseling and your work with New Jersey Revolution Radio. It means a lot just to be here and to support our network as a partner with us. You know, like you said, as a little family, you're part of it. So before we go, of course, I like to play a little music in the background and tell everybody, you know, how they can get in touch with you. And I know you're all over the place. You say you got to pull it down. And so she's working hard and she's going to burn out again soon. So break, where can we check out Dr. Leticia?
Okay, so you guys can see me on drleticia.com. You can see me on greatjoycounseling.org. You can see me on Instagram at Great Joy Counseling, Twitter, Great Joy Counseling, and Facebook, Great Joy Counseling and Consulting Services. And one thing that I want the people to know is if you reach out to me, it is really me that reaches out to you back, right? So I take all of my DMs personally. I have no problem responding to you because I know that some people are not ready to sit in a therapy seat yet. So if I can assist you in any way before you do that, I am all ears. So please, please, please feel free to reach out to me.
You have to talk about it, right? You said you have to talk about it. And not everybody's an extrovert like me will come on a media network and talk about problems.
Exactly.
We'll have a lot of problems talking about this. But if you're just listening to this and you hear it, you have to talk about it with somebody, a friend, a family member, somebody. Start talking about it. I think that's the first step. It's always the first step of mine. So I appreciate you, Dr. Leticia Sampson. Reach out to her. If you see her at a protest, make sure you give her a little elbow tap. let her know. Thanks for being on New Jersey Revolution Radio Live. I want to thank our sponsors again one more time, the Coffee House in Edison, New Jersey. We're coming back as soon as it's safe. We'll come back, I promise. I really want to do shows back out in the public. I can't wait till this vaccine gets ready. I want it to be safe and do the Trump. I'm not listening to what Donald Trump has to say about it, but when the doctors say it's cool to take a vaccine, I can't wait so we can get back out there and be with the people and hug and and really get back to it. So the Coffee House in Edison, support them. They're open. Let them know that New Jersey Revolution Radio is why you heard about them. And Blissful Infusions. Take a look at them on Facebook. They do CBD chocolates. I know that Dr. Leticia's business also does medical cannabis consulting. So you can check her out online if you want to look into that. And the CBD edibles available from Blissful Infusions go to a business that supports the medical cannabis community as well here in New Jersey. So thanks a lot for that. Thanks again, everybody. Until next week, I'm not going to say it. This is a nice special. I'm not going to say my usual sign off. I'm just going to say thank you very much. New Jersey Revolution Radio Live is off for the rest of the month. We return in October. Guest host Kim Mike. Guest hosts from all over the country are going to start coming in here and visiting me on a weekly basis every week, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, live on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, or at www.njrevolutionradio.com. That was a very long closing. I got to go to my weekend. See y'all later. Peace.
Bye.